Pablo. Pablo, honey, you listen to a modest joint? Pablo, sometimes on a modest joint, they use a profanity and bad language. I don't like it. It hurt my feelings, Pablo. Pablo, honey, honey, you keep your ass clean? Honey, every day you wash your ass, Pablo?
So there you go. That's my fucked up disclaimer. I do use profanity on the show. If you don't like it, you know, go back to your pad. If you don't mind, you can chill at my pad and kick back. I'm really glad you're here at Modest Joint. So it looks like you're going to stay. All right. Go ahead and pull up a seat here, man. Let me get the steel folding chair out for you. There you go. Have a seat. It's always good to, when you come over to my pad, sit in the steel folding chair, because if you're not sitting in it, I'm more than likely going to pick it up and wrap you upside the fucking head with it. I'm glad you're here at Modest Joint. This week, I'm not going to do the plugs like I normally do. I plugged everything last week, so if you want to hear what's going on with me, you can check out my program on the archives, or you can go to myspace.com/MichaelModest. You can also email me at michael.modest@gmail.com. This week on Modest Joint, I've got a few things to cover here. I've got my own Razor Ramon story. I listened to the Iron Sheik's Make You Humble, great program, and Scott Hall had caused some kind of hoopla or ruckus at the Iron Sheik's roast, and so Iron Sheik, he's yelling at Scott Hall on his program, and at one point he says, Scott Hall, if 20 years ago I fuck you in your stinky asshole, cocksucker. And I loved it. It was just fucking great, man. I listen to Sheik's program every week, so if you're going to listen to one of these, you got to check out Make You Humble, Iron Sheik. It's a great program. So I've got my own Scott Hall story. I figured since he was topical, I'd share my own little Scott. I'm thinking about calling the segment Tender Moments with Scott Hall. Or I might change it to Tender Moments with Razor Ramon. You guys tell me. I don't know which the best title is. But I think if you've been in this business long enough, everyone's got their own tender moment with Scott Hall. So I'll share my tender moment. I'm also going to discuss this week wrestling accidents and how I think half of them are avoidable. I'm going to answer emails. And, of course, this week we've got the top 10. And this week's top 10 is the top 10 worst things I ate in Japan. I'm thinking about actually starting the show off with that. Why don't I do that? I'm going to start it off with the top 10 worst things I ate in Japan while I was wrestling there. Number 10 is the worked sandwich. What they do is at the convenience stores, they have these sandwiches. They pile all the meat to the front, so it looks like a heaping portion of meat with your sandwich. But the meat's gone within one bite, and it's mostly just bread. So that's number 10. Number 9, natto. It's a fermented bean paste. It tastes and smells like dirty feet. And, yes, I've sucked on a couple of dirty toes. I know. You've lost a lot of respect for me, haven't you? Number 8, I ate crickets. I was dressed up like a samurai, downtown Tokyo. Why not? You know, kind of wanted to fit in with the Roman type, you know, do as the Romans do. Number 7, the Nightmare Cheeseburger. This little cheeseburger stand was by a bathroom, and the patties of the burger actually tasted, and they had the flavor of a urinal cake. And no, I've never eaten a urinal cake, but it's just, I'm using my imagination here. And then the cheeseburger also had seaweed on it, so that was pretty bad. Number 6, worst thing I ate, ground horse. Of course, it's raw. They don't cook it. They take a spoon and put a hole in the top of the pile of raw horse meat and crack a raw egg, throw some sesame seeds on that fucker and a little sauce, and it's good to go. My mouth actually tingled while I was eating it. It was like my mouth was telling me I was eating something very naughty. Number five, nastiest thing I ate in Japan, pig colon, barbecued pig colon. I know what you're thinking. Why didn't I have pig colon at my last barbecue? I know, it goes great with potato salad. Number four, worst thing I ate, tuna eye. When you put the eye in your mouth and pop it, that warm, juicy liquid just starts flowing in the mouth. Pretty bad, pretty bad. Especially me being a guy. That's just not... Anyways, okay. Number three, live skewered fish. What they did was they put a little skewered thing. It's like a little stand. They shove it up the fish's ass, out its mouth. They start filleting the flesh. You eat it while the fish is gasping for air and its gills are going. It's a lot of fun for kids. Kids really seem to get a kick out of this. That was pretty bad. Number two worst thing I ate was bacon sponge French toast. What happened was there was this tray, and they put the old toast in the bottom of the tray, and then they put the bacon on top. And, you know, the old toast isn't meant for, you know, being ate. It's just to soak up the bacon grease. And when I went up to the tray, the bacon was all gone. I didn't read Japanese, so I didn't know it was a bacon tray. I thought it was French toast. I grabbed three pieces because you gotta get your share of French toast. I grabbed three pieces of it, took it back to my table. I couldn't find any syrup. That should have been a clue. And I just put strawberry jam on it and had a nice big bite of coagulated bacon grease soaked old toast. It was, wow, bad. And the number one worst thing I ate in Japan was a live tiger shrimp. What they do is the referee Mighty asked me if I wanted some shrimp, and I said sure. So the guy just peels the scales off of its tail and puts it on my plate, literally, and the fucking thing's crawling off my plate, trying to, you know, make the great escape and make it back to the water with no fucking shell on his tail. And I said that, no, you know, this is a joke. You're trying to rib me. And they assured me that it wasn't. And there was a lady actually sitting at the sushi bar, and she ordered it specifically so that I could watch her eat it and see that, no, in fact, it wasn't a joke. It was my worst nightmare. And I bit into this fucking thing. When I did it, I didn't want to insult anybody, so I went ahead and tried. And I bit into it, and as my teeth pierced its flesh, I could feel its whole body tighten up. And the lady that was sitting at the bar, she had to throw in the little comment, "Itai," which means pain. And so she was letting me know that, yeah, now the shrimp's in pain. Oh, no shit. I mean, my teeth are, you know, sliding through its flesh like fucking a hot knife through butter. You think it's in pain? Maybe. So that kind of sucked. There you go. That's my top 10 worst things I ate in Japan while I was wrestling over there for Pro Wrestling Noah. So let me get on with my Scott Hall story here. And in order to do that, we're going to have to travel in time, 15 years back in time, at least 15 years, maybe a little longer. And how are we going to travel back in time, you're asking me? Yeah, okay. Well, since you're here in my pad, you probably didn't notice, but out back, I've got a Starship parked there. Yes, yes, at great personal expense, I did purchase a Starship for this program. Now, the Starship wasn't near as expensive as just the gas is going to be to get there. Gas prices are just fucking outrageous, and they're even going down, but I remember still when it was $2, you know, they're not fooling me with it. Anyways, let me move on here. Let's get in the mothership. Let's climb into the ship and take a trip. I've got to push a couple of buttons here. Hold on one second. We're ready for blast off. 3, 2, 1. Ready for blast off. Charlie Alpha Bravo. All right, here we are, back in time, 15 years ago. Here's the door. This is the hotel right here where we met Razor Ramon. Let me open the door here. Oh, shit. Oh, sorry. No. No, guys, I can't come in this time. No. Looks like a lot of fun. Nope. All right. Yeah, I got people here with me. All right, bye. close that door. Okay, now that's a little embarrassing. Sorry about that. I didn't go back in time quite far enough. That was a time Donovan and I worked an indie show in San Francisco, and we stayed in this hotel room, and it was a suite, and I walked in Donovan's room, and he was there with two girls. They invited a long story. Anyways, let's go back to the ship, blast off. We got to go back a couple more months here. You know, this is going to cut. You take a wrong turn when you're time traveling. You know the expense. I mean, this is going to cost me $1 million. Wrong turn. Go figure. All right, ready to blast off again? All right, there we go. Now we're even further back in time by another 3 months. Now here's my Razor Ramon story. This is where it takes place. It's a bar in San Francisco. Donovan and I and Roland and a valet named Voluptuous Brenda had gone there, and we were turning in, we were giving Paul Orndorff some resumes and videos, things of that nature. So we met with Paul, and then we went to the bar in the hotel, and Razor Ramon was there, Scott Hall. And Roland walks up to Scott, introduces himself. Scott didn't like Roland right off the bat, especially when Roland told him he was, you know, an indie promoter. And Scott was very cool to all of us, all the boys. He was, you know, really nice, told a lot of stories, talked about a lot of injuries that he sustained even before he made money, and how the business is really tough. And boy, I'll tell you, it was all true, Scott, very true stuff. But all night, we were there, I don't know, 2-3 hours. And while we were there, man, Scott just did not like Roland, and he kept looking over at Roland, and then he'd go, hey, you, I just don't fucking like you, man. You know that? I just don't fucking like you. So at one point, Roland was distracted. Scott grabs Roland's beer off of the bar and pisses in it and puts it back up on the bar. And I don't know if Roland had known that there was urine in it or not, but Roland never actually went for the beer again. He had left the beer alone. And Scott kept telling him, hey, you know, you need to drink more beer, motherfucker. And so Roland got ready to leave, and Scott went ahead and poured the beer on Roland and said, wait, man, you forgot your beer, and dumped it on him and then said, why don't you get out of here? You stink. You smell like piss. And, you know, it was pretty brutal. I don't know that Roland deserved all that, but, you know, Scott is Scott, and Roland handled it like a big boy. And there you go. That's my tender moment with Scott Hall. Just, you know, just wanted to share it with you. I figured since he was the topical thing this week, I'd go ahead and throw in my 2 cents. Let's move on to my next subject. I think I'm going to cover emails next. Let me get my trusty notes out and see here. Yeah, let's do emails. Chad from Wales asks me if I really worked at a mortuary. Well, you know, when they filmed, Chad, when they filmed the Beyond the Mat thing, I wasn't currently working at a mortuary. That was all reenactment. But at one point, I did work for them, for the mortuary, and that was during the interview process of Beyond the Mat. That's where I was working. When they brought me on to the movie, they wanted to reenact that. They felt like it was just more interesting than what I was doing at the time. There was a couple of good stories, though, working for the mortuary. One was we dug a guy up. He had been buried 25 years, and when we dug him up, there was a water table down in, you know, that had been soaking in his casket, and it had breached the casket. And so when we picked it up with the tractor, this black sludge came rushing out of the casket, and it was just horrible. The smell was brutal. And thousands of flies just instantaneously. And, you know, that crap that you see people putting on their noses, like FBI, and, you know, so that they don't smell the dead body. Man, it does not fucking work. It's like spraying perfume on a pile of shit. It just, it does nothing to hide that odor, really. It just makes it minty. It's horrible. And then when we moved the guy, I had the biohazard suit on and the whole nine. When we moved him from one casket to the other, to his new casket, I noticed he had these mushrooms growing on his head and on his forehead. And I'll tell you, if you think that doesn't fuck you up, boy, that was like a year worth of therapy right there alone, and I'm still fucked up by it. And then the other thing that was kind of funny was there was four ladies in a room. I was there to pick up one. One was dead, and I walk into the room, and there's four of them in there, and they all looked dead to me. And it was kind of like being on Dead Lady Game Show, or, it was like, if you pick the right dead lady, you win a new car. It was really bizarre. And I walked out, and I asked the nurse, I said, hey, which one of them is dead? And so she brings me, and she shows me. She goes back out of the room. I lower the bed. She stays sitting up, so I figure it's rigor mortis. I put my knee in her lap, and I start shoving her down, and her back starts snap, crackling, popping. And I'm like, oh, my God. And I go back out, and I tell the nurse, hey, I'm having trouble getting her to lay down. The nurse says, oh, she's got curvature of the spine, which would have been nice, to buzz me on that. But she didn't. She came back in. She helped me get her on the gurney. I got the body bag zipped, but because of the way her body was, when I was rolling, her body would bounce, and it looked like someone struggling to get out of the body bag. And I wheeled her out the back of the mortuary, and there was an old man sitting there in a wheelchair, and he started screaming, oh, my God, she's alive. They're taking her, and she's alive. So there's my fun little mortuary stories for you, Chad. Thank you for writing me and asking. Next, I got Whiplash. Whiplash is a big guy, big wrestler from, I'm not even sure where, I think back east somewhere. Anyways, he wanted me to critique one of his matches. And I warned him that when I do that, I'm pretty honest, brutally honest, in fact. And so he still wanted me to critique it for him. So I did. And here's my critique. First of all, let me set it up. The match he sent me, the promoter or announcer, whoever it is cracking jokes like over the PA. He's like the play-by-play guy, and he's play-by-playing out loud. Like, I hate when promoters do that, but especially the way this jackass was doing it, because all he did was poke fun and take the business lightly the entire time, and it just made it really bad. But here's what I wrote. Honestly, brother, don't hate me, but it was pretty bad. There were so many things I could talk about, but I'm only going to point out a few things that may benefit you. The next time you work a show and some jackass sits there and makes fun of you all during your match, do me a favor. Get out of the ring and slap that motherfucker right in the motherfucking mouth two fucking times. It's near impossible to get over a crowd with an announcer or a promoter going on like that. Lose the silly string. Be serious at all times when you wrestle. Take yourself and your opponent seriously. Get wrestling boots and gear. Bro, the match seriously had me wondering if you were ever trained. There were so many very green mistakes. The way you ran into the turnbuckle at a point was horrible. You fought off into the crowd where shit was up close and personal and you weren't stiff. People were so not buying what you were selling. In fact, a 4-year-old girl didn't even move while you were fighting inches from her. Her parents didn't remove her from the danger either, because no one had respect for what you were doing. In short, from what I saw, bro, it looked very backyard. You guys were fighting back to the ring, and one of you pushed the other half-heartedly, and the other oversold it and fell towards the ring. If you are still reading, and you don't think I'm an asshole yet, then good for you. All is not lost. Slow down. Make everything you do as a big man count for something. You don't move well from corner to corner. You take too many steps. Try building more momentum with fewer steps. For example, at one point you threw him in and charged, and you had no momentum, but you ran from one corner to the other. Instead, release him slightly past the halfway point. thin sell into him. You know, writing this just isn't the same as showing you. Hopefully one day we'll be able to work mano a mano. Peace, brother, and all the best of luck to you. So that's my response to him. And, you know, I don't try to insult or hurt anybody's feelings or certainly discourage anybody. I always want to do just the opposite. But I do call it like it is. And here was his response to my email. The thing that bothers me the most is when people ask for advice or critique, and then I give it to them, and then they want to start a debate. And they're going to tell me why they did things this way or why it's that way. And, you know, really, I don't care. It's just my opinion. You know, your success in this business doesn't begin or end on my say-so. So I really liked the way Whiplash responded to my critique. And this is the way you do it. If you're a teachable person, this is the way you do it. Here's what Whiplash responded. I understand what you said, and I'm willing to work on it. I have some custom baggy pants on the way right now and boots as well. I wanted to thank you for taking the time to watch my match and give me some pointers. A lot of guys wouldn't have done that when they have done so much in their career. Thanks again, Whiplash. Whiplash, my brother. Thumbs up and a big Modesto smile to you, man. That is your biggest asset in this business, is the fact that you can listen to somebody, keep your fucking mouth shut, hear what they have to say, and take it for what it's worth. You know, the wonderful thing is when you don't talk back or you don't counter what someone says, you can just take what you want, you know, polish up some of the shit I say and, you know, use it whatever way you want. But you don't necessarily have to. But when you make excuses, it just pisses me off. So I'm really glad that Whiplash was so open to constructive criticism. Now, Mike Rubin. Now, Mike Rubin wrote me, and this is kind of good because it moves into my next whole topic and the end of the show, basically. Mike Rubin asks, he says, my friends say that wrestling is all staged and fake. I told my friends that I think wrestling is sometimes very real. Am I right? You know, Mike Rubin, I am so glad that some people have fucking common sense. You know, some kids are just a little brighter than others. Yeah, you know, it gets real all the time in the ring. Here's a real quick list of some of the guys that shit's gotten sticky in the ring with, or there was some kind of problem. Fatu. One of the Fatus, there's a few of them, but one of the Fatus I had problems with in the ring. Tony Jones was offered money to hurt me in the ring. Phenomenal Phil Landers from L.A., we got into it. The Artist, formerly known as Prince Iakea, we got into it. Big Van Vader, Too Cold Scorpio. Too Cold Scorpio, it was more or less just like a little test type thing in the beginning. And I gave him a receipt, and then we lightened up and worked real good. And Too Cold, you know, he's a tough motherfucker. So I'm really glad that, you know, we hit it off real well. He was my favorite person to work in Japan. So Bruce Hart. I mean, seriously, I could go on and on. Samoan Bulldog, this guy Luscious Luke from around this area, Matt Moon from the West Coast. There's so many guys where shit has gotten legit in there. And then on top of that, you add to that accidents. You know, tell your friends, Mike, to go to YouTube and click on wrestling accidents. And you look at the accidents on there, just fucking horrible. Some of the things that guys have done to themselves. I watched Vic Grimes fall off of that fucking scaffold again against New Jack. And, you know, I trained Vic, and I love that guy, and I don't want to see him get fucking hurt. And I see crazy shit like that, and I'm like, what the fuck? Since when did the boys become the fucking marks? I don't get it. You know, the reason I say that a lot of these accidents are preventable is guys are forgetting that we are in sports entertainment. And entertainment's a very broad term. You can do all kinds of things to entertain. You don't have to put your fucking life and limb on the line. You know, you watch Ultimate Fighting, I mean, you know, the worst you're going to get is a sock or a kick in the jaw. I mean, you might get a broken arm from a, you know, submission or something like that. But when you got guys climbing up on scaffolds and dropping 40 fucking feet through tables and hitting ring ropes and shit like that, hey, they can just literally kill you. And, you know, have your friends, Mike, go to the wrestling accidents. You know, I would say, you know, to young guys that are getting into this business, you know, have your mind, be thinking differently with your mind. Don't think, what can I do? What kind of crazy move can I do to get a pop? Look for the other shit where you get a pop. You know, I made a good living in Japan for 5 years, and for all five of those years, my very first trip to Japan, what happened was they brought us to this place, and Japanese photographers were taking pictures of us for fucking ever. And this is right after we got off the plane. We haven't even been to our hotel room yet. And at one point, I thought we were done, and I was getting ready to leave, and some of the photographers were like, oh, please, Modesto-san, mo icho. They wanted one more picture. So years before, I had been watching a videotape of one of my students. One of my students went on the Bruise Cruise, the WCW Bruise Cruise. And I was watching, there was this video of Lex Luger shaking hands with fans and taking pictures with fans. And in between the pictures, Lex looked like he was in hell. And he just looked miserable and like, oh, fuck, I hate this, you know. But then as soon as the fan would walk up, he'd be holding their hand, still with a miserable face, and then the cameraman would say, okay, ready. And then Lex would throw on this real fake, exaggerated smile. And I thought it was hilarious when I saw it. And then as soon as the camera flashed, the smile dropped. He could give a fuck about the fan he was shaking hands with, and he was moving on to the next fan. And I thought it was hilarious. So when this Japanese photographers, they wanted me to, you know, take some more pictures, I turned around and I gave them the same exaggerated, cheesy smile and a big thumbs up, and they popped. All of a sudden, the flashes started fucking going off. And I thought, wow, I've picked up on something here. And so, you know, I went to Japan, and yes, I wrestled hard, and the wrestling is very, very physical in Japan. But I found a niche where I could get over by doing a thumbs up and a smile, and my body's not at risk doing that. And, you know, I'd do like an elbow drop, get up for a third one, stop, pause, step on the guy's stomach, give the big thumbs up and smile to the fans. And, you know, I would look for things like that I would notice that fans would pop off of, so that I could save my body. It's all about longevity, you know. And these young guys, they get booked on these little indie shows, and they want to go out and they want to do every fucking move. They want to, every match is the main event. It's like, you know, guys, really, man, calm down. See the forest for the trees. Take a step back and think, do I want to be in this business for 20 years like Mike Modest, or do I want to be in this business for 3 years because I break my fucking neck in my third year? Seriously, guys, body slams, elbow drops, knee lifts, suplexes, all that shit really does still get over. Hammer locks, headlocks, you know, be creative with your wrestling. Throw in more amateur wrestling. You know, Ultimate Fight stuff, it's over like Rover. So incorporate more of that into your pro wrestling rather than fucking hitting each other with light bulbs and diving off the fucking ladders. So anyways, that's me just giving my shout out to the boys. I love the boys. I don't want to see people get hurt. There was one time Vic Grimes, he lit a table on fire, and I was supposed to suplex him. Me and Tony Jones were supposed to double suplex him through this fucking table. And Vic, instead of lighter fluid, he got kerosene, put it on this fucking table. The thing went up like a fucking torch. It was horrible, 15 feet fucking flames, and I could feel the heat. It was burning my fucking eyebrows, and Vic still wanted to go through it, and I didn't want my brother to, you know, get third-degree burns. So me and Tony Jones ended up holding on to him while he was trying to bump himself through the fucking table, and that's how bad it gets sometimes. Some of these guys, man, they just really want to put their bodies on the line, and thing is, you get burnt up, man. The fans ain't going to be sending you too many fucking letters, you know, and they certainly won't pay your bills. So take care of yourself out there, boys. Don't get too crazy. Remember, wrestling still is hardcore. Make sure to check me out at the Big Time Wrestling Show coming up this Friday at the Newark Pavilion, October 24th. Or you can check me out at SPW in Sacramento on Sunday, October 26th. That's what's coming up for me. And this has been your host, Michael Modest. You can email me at michael.modest@gmail.com. This is Michael Modest saying, I love pro wrestling more than ever. Peace.